Okay, we're rolling now.
Joan Spector, how did the pamphlet How to Have Sex with Kids first get called to your attention?
Someone from a child welfare agency called me and said that she had in her possession a pamphlet called How to Have Sex with Kids. And, of course, I couldn't believe such a pamphlet existed. I asked her to send it over, and she did, and she told me where it was purchased. So I asked my secretary to call the bookstore and ask them if, in fact, they had it, because here again, it was impossible to believe it was available. She called the bookstore, and they said, yes, they had it. They would check. And then they came back and said, no, they've all been sold out. And then I asked her to ask them if they could reorder it. And she asked the question, can you reorder it? And they said, yes, we will try to reorder it. So here we had a bookstore, and I consider it to be a legitimate bookstore in the city of Philadelphia, that had knowingly, because they knew initially that they had the book, knowingly on their bookshelves a book that said How to Have Sex with Kids, and they were prepared to reorder it.
Okay. What action did you take once you knew that this book existed and that it had been carried in a Philadelphia bookstore?
Well, Terry, I read the pamphlet, and then I knew that there were going to be a lot of First Amendment safeguards in a pamphlet such as this, and I decided that the best thing to do was to turn it over to law enforcement officials. So I wrote to Ed Rendell, the district attorney, U.S. Attorney Dennis, and the United States Attorney General Smith, sending them the pamphlet and saying, this pamphlet is available on the Philadelphia bookstores, and I would like to know what can be done about this type of pamphlet.
Did you call the bookstore and let them know you were doing that?
No. I treated that bookstore, Terry, the same way I would treat Encore. I felt under no obligation to tell them what action I was taking. I simply wanted to be sure that, in fact, they carried the book, and then I was going to proceed.
You would like to see that book and manuals like it banned. Can you sum up the reasons why?
Well, I have a concern about manuals, and this manual is not sexually explicit in that it has no pictures, and that, of course, then does not fall under the Child Pornography Act, so it loses the right of freedom of speech there. But I have a concern about pamphlets that are how to do it and how to, what I call, how to abuse children, because you can't have sex with a child because a child has no informed consent. And how can you be telling people to commit an act that is really, in fact, illegal? The truth of the matter is, the pamphlet was written in Austin, Texas. The district attorney in Austin, Texas has indicted the author of the book as a result of the publicity here in Philadelphia. And the district attorney there has filed suit under the basis that it has no redeeming features and that it is offensive. And we will have to see how that court case evolves.
Okay, so to sum up, you'd like to see the book banned because it encourages people to commit unsanctionable acts.
I think that's correct. It encourages people to commit acts that I think are illegal.
Okay. Barry Steinhardt, director of the Philadelphia ACLU, do you think that this manual and books similar to it should be banned?
We're very troubled by any proposal to ban books, to ban speech. First, I'd like to point out that I think that this book may almost be unique. We've heard reference to manuals. This is the only one of its type that thus far has been cited. And that's part of what bothers us, that in a general attempt to ban a specific book, we may sweep into the orbit of whatever legislation which is passed any number of other materials that everyone might consider to be legitimate or socially useful, for example, materials that are published by groups whose very purpose is to combat child sexual abuse. Those materials, by their nature of the work those people are doing, have to be to some extent explicit. And I'm very concerned that in the attempt to go after this particular book, which may well be unique or nearly unique, that we may have that effect.
This book does not fall into any of the current child pornography guidelines. Can you sum up what the current legislation is regarding child pornography?
Well, there are a number of different state and federal, and there's, in fact, even a city of Philadelphia ordinance. Basically, the child pornography laws that we have in this country, in which largely have been upheld by the United States Supreme Court, have been upheld on the grounds that material which may not be legally obscene if it's sold to an adult, can still be banned because a child was actually used in the production of that material. So it is the act of using the child that is being punished. In this book, there was no child who was used in making the book. There are no pictures in the book, as Councilwoman Spector said. It's a written description of some things, but there is no actual child. So it doesn't come under the state child pornography law. I don't believe it comes under the federal child pornography law either. The question then, is it legally obscene under the state or federal laws? I don't think so. I don't think in large part, because I don't think it appeals to the prurient interest. I've discussed this book with a number of constitutional experts. For example, Paul Bender, who was at Penn Law School and who is now the dean of the Arizona State Law School and who was the general counsel to the United States Commission on Pornography, reviewed the book at the request of the ACLU, and his conclusion was that the book was not legally obscene. And I think generally that has been the conclusion, that is not obscene, legally obscene. If it was, I suspect we would have seen a prosecution.
So if I understand correctly, the law now distinguishes between writing something about children and actually using something with children in it, actually using the children.
Yes.
So if you are actually shooting a child with shooting filmically a child engaged in a sexual act or in a simulation of a sexual act, that is illegal. But if you are writing something about children and no children are involved, that is not illegal now.
That's exactly right.
Do you think that distinction should be maintained? I mean, and if so, why?
Well, I think the distinction here is between speech and action. The action which is being punished in the current laws is the action of using a child, abusing a child. There's no question that using a child in a sexually explicit film or photograph is going to be an act of child abuse, and that should be and can be punished. But that's different from speech. I think, for example, if you say, well, written descriptions of sex with children or of the advocacy of sex with children should be banned, then you may have some trouble distinguishing how to have sex with kids from Lolita. And that's the difficulty that we have, is whether or not you can in fact draw a line, or whether in fact you should even attempt to draw a line, because in large part that difficulty.
I'd like to respond to Barry, if I might, Terry. I think that what we really have to do, it seems to me, is to tackle these books on a book-by-book basis. And then I rather agree that you can't have an expansive law. But I agree with the indictment in Austin, Texas. Let's take this book on this book's basis and see what the courts say about this particular book. You know, from what I hear, there is a real underground of pedophile material. So we don't really know that this manual is distinct in and of itself, the only one. My sense is there's probably a lot out there that we don't know about. And I would like to see us take the cases on an individual basis, perhaps without a law, but encourage the district attorneys in the cities to file suit and to indict these people. And let's see what the court says.
Do you think that's legally feasible, Barry Steinhardt?
Well, when I suggested before that I thought the book was unique, I think and it may not be the only one of its kind, but I think I have not seen others like it. And what makes it different, and what makes it different from the vast mass of material that we call, that's generally referred to as child pornography, is that the vast mass of material involves photographs or films of real children engaged in sexual acts. This book does not. No one has yet shown me, and no one has yet discussed another book like this one or another pamphlet like this one, and that's what makes it different. And that's what I think is dangerous about the prosecutions, is that this book does not involve an action, rather a concept, and that's what regard is dangerous.
John Spector, how do you think we should weigh the possible damages that a book like this could cause in society with the possible harm that banning a book like this could cause to other literature and to First Amendment rights?
Well, I think that's always a hard question, Terry. I think that our most sacred right is our First Amendment right and the freedom of speech. And certainly the Supreme Court struggled with that when we had our obscenity laws passed finally. And that's why I really do believe that we shouldn't have, not initially in any way, a kind of a broad-based law, but we should take them on a case-by-case basis. We do have the Supreme Court of the United States, to which all of these matters will eventually end up. And I think that they will have an opportunity to make the final decision. We are in a very delicate position, I think, when we're talking about pornography as it applies to children. And I think it's a place set aside from adult pornography. And I think that we need to be especially vigilant, and that would be my concern.
Barry, how do you think that we should weigh the possible harm to the First Amendment and the First Amendment rights that banning a book can cause to the possible harm that that book could cause in society?
Well, first, I don't know that anyone's produced any evidence that the book caused any harm. Certainly nobody's produced any evidence that this particular book caused anyone to commit an act of sexual abuse. Secondly, in most of the testimony at the legislative hearings on this bill, which were conducted very recently, was to the effect that there is no proven direct link between materials like this and sexual abuse of children. I mean, we have had testimony at hearings both before the state legislature and before Senator Arlen Specter's subcommittee, where people have testified, for example, the fact that there are pedophiles who can become sexually aroused by photographs of children in wearing underwear in the Sears catalog, and that banning this kind of material is not going to solve that problem. So I don't know that there's yet any proven basis for saying that the book itself causes harm. The harm that can be done from banning a concept is twofold. When you begin to ban ideas, it's very hard to stop. Once you begin, it's very hard to draw the line. Secondly, the discussion of this book, in its own way, has had a very salutary effect. It has brought to the fore again a very important issue, and that is the issue of child sexual abuse. And that was an issue that was hidden for centuries, perhaps, but certainly in our culture for decades. So we are of the belief that the answer to bad speech is not to ban it, but to have more speech, and that in the marketplace of ideas, if you will, that the good ideas will weigh out. And I think there's been a real benefit in having people become aware of the problem and bringing a problem to the fore which has been hidden for so long.
Where do you draw the line, or do you recommend never drawing the line when it comes to speech? For instance, if there was a book recommending the murder and dismemberment of people, would that be something that you would defend?
Well, we generally draw the line between speech and action. The Supreme Court has defined a test they call the clear and present danger test, and that is when you have speech that is so close to an action which is illegal that it's likely to cause that action imminently, that you can then ban the speech, punish the speech. I suppose the most famous example of that is the shouting and fire in the crowded theater. That's not the case here. At least, it's certainly not the case with regard to the bookstore that sold this book. That may be different from a situation where an individual passes the book along to another individual for the express purpose of having sex with a particular child. That might be a different situation, but that's not the situation with regard to a bookstore which sold it without knowing who the book was going to, and in fact, in the belief that the book was an archival material, that is, material that was published for the purpose of letting the world see what kinds of materials pedophiles use. So that's very different. And one of the dangers in passing a statute that might apply to a bookstore is that you go after a bookstore which is has nothing to do with sexual abuse, but rather is adding to the general bank of information about a problem.
Councilperson Joan Spector, do you think that this is a workable way of drawing the line, just leaving the line between speech and action?
I think the Supreme Court drew the line differently on obscene literature when they said that obscene literature was had no redeeming features, that it was offensive, that it was contrary to community standards, so that they did not draw the line between action and speech. And I think that I keep going back to the fact that we're talking about a child. And I guess I must tell you, Cherry, that I have a far greater concern about someone who was so young, someone who cannot defend himself. And I think that we have to look more carefully at what we're doing as it affects children.
So do you think we need two different civil liberty standards, one for adults and one for children?
I believe we already have to some extent when the United States Senate, I think it was Arlen's bill, as a matter of fact, which said that books that depicted, magazines that depicted children could no longer be sent intrastate. So I think that that was a clear change in the law. But I think that Barry could probably be much more explicit in terms of the things we're doing for children and the things we're doing for adults.
Well, Barry Sternhardt of the ACLU, should we treat literature about children any differently than we treat it about adults, assuming that it's the literature and not the act that we're talking about?
Well, in the past, the legislation that the ACLU has supported is legislation which bans the use of children in the creation of this material. That's different from a law which says that you can ban the dissemination of that material. But I should add that Councilwoman Spector is right, that the courts have developed now, well, we don't particularly agree with them, but they have developed two standards, one for material that involves children, one material that involves adults, and they have upheld statutes like the one we have in Pennsylvania and like federal statutes, which not only prohibit the act of using children in the creation of the material, but also the dissemination of that material.
We're discussing whether literature that tells you how or recommends having sex with children should be banned. And as you know, there's a book that a little pamphlet called How to Have Sex with Children that was sold at an area bookstore that caused a whole round of controversial discussions, including hearings on this subject. And with me is Barry Sternhardt, the director of the Philadelphia ACLU, and Philadelphia City Councilperson Joan Spector. One thing I'd like to ask you, Joan Spector, you've expressed concern that this book and books like it, if there are any, would encourage people to have sex with children. And Barry Sternhardt, you said that there's no real evidence that it's in fact encouraged anybody to behave any differently than they've already behaved. How relevant a question is that for the issue of whether or not this book and other similar books should be banned? You know, the question of whether this literature might encourage pedophilia. Is that a relevant question to the civil liberties issues involved?
Well, that is a question that people have been struggling with for years and years, and it's certainly a question that Arlen has tried to elicit some response in the Senate hearings. And people have come forward and testified that someone in the family has been reading pornographic material, and then as a result of that, they engaged in abusive sex. I don't know whether or not, and the Supreme Court never asked for that relationship when it defined obscenity either, the relationship between reading it and the act. And I think that, and Paul Bender would certainly say that reading the Sears and Roebuck catalog is you know, perhaps no worse than a lot of pornographic materials. I don't know. It's a very difficult problem. I don't think that we're ever going to come out in the law and make that decision based upon the relationship between the reading and the act, because I think it's always going to be so difficult to prove.
Well, I think that's the ultimate question, what the relationship between the reading and the act is. The reason that the Supreme Court has upheld our child pornography laws, and a case they upheld was a case called Ferber. It came out of a New York statute, which is not too dissimilar to the Pennsylvania law or to the federal laws. And the reason they upheld it is because of the act of using a child. And so I think that is the ultimate question, whether there is a direct connection. One of the curious things about this book is that the book really, in its own way, and I'm by no means suggesting I think the book is appropriate or makes pleasant reading, but in its own way, the book is very cautionary about sex with children, and much more cautionary, and so cautionary, in fact, that I think that pedophiles would almost find it kind of naive. For example, it cautions not to have intercourse with young girls, prepubescent girls. It cautions about venereal disease. It has other cautions in it that I think that a person who is already a pedophile is going to find naive and not particularly helpful. It cautions, for example, not to pay for sex with children, and we know that's from the recent prosecutions in Philadelphia that that's a real problem in this city and in any city. So that's an element of this book that really in the discussion around it has not come out. That goes to the question of whether or not this book is actually going to result in anyone committing an act of abuse.
Pennsylvania Attorney General Leroy Zimmerman, at the recent state hearings that were held in Philadelphia, made several legislative proposals that I'd like to review with you and get your reaction to. One directly relating to the question of this book is his proposal to outlaw manuals that tell how to have sex with children and to toughen penalties for selling them. I think you've already made clear your stand about the existence of such manuals, but what about selling them? What kind of penalty, if any, do you think there should be for a store or a person selling the manual? Now, Joan Spector, you'd like to see the manual illegal, but what about the penalty for the person selling it?
Well, I think that the Attorney General suggested something like a 5-year penalty for something like this. And my guess is they person would never get anything like a 5-year penalty. They'd probably spend a few months in jail if they spent any time. But what it would say is it's illegal and you better not have it on the stands because you're going to stand trial and you may, in fact, go to jail. But here again, I think that one should take it on a case-by-case basis. And we had this book here and our district attorney decided that there were serious First Amendment rights involved, and he could not see taking a case. But then again, the district attorney in Austin, Texas, did. So I think that probably Mr. Zimmerman would not get his law through, would be my bottom line.
But would you like to see that pass?
I'm not sure, Terry. I'm not sure. What I would like to see is district attorneys take the cases and let the courts decide rather than have a blanket law, I think. I'd feel a little bit more comfortable if we had a vigorous district attorney who wanted to take a look at them on a case-by-case basis.
Barry Steinhardt?
Well, clearly we don't think that there would be illegal. Certainly don't think the penalty ought to be for 5 years. One of the difficulties in this area is that if you go after persons who sell the material, you are putting an enormous burden on booksellers. I mean, for example, you're almost putting the burden on them to read everything they have in their store. In an average bookstore in Philadelphia, I don't know how many books they carry, but into the hundreds or thousands. This book has a very provocative title. But not all books have. In fact, the title may be the most provocative thing about the book. But not all books do, and not all magazines do. And it's not possible for booksellers to know the content of everything that they're selling. And I gather from the owners of this store that they didn't know the content of what they were selling in this case.
Okay. Another recommendation that Attorney General of Pennsylvania Leroy Zimmerman had was that we undo the exception that currently exists in child pornography laws. It's currently an exception that if the book or movie has a literary, artistic, educational, or scientific merit, that it's exempted from being illegal. He wants to do away with that exemption, saying that there's no such thing as child pornography with merit or value. Do you care to comment on that, Joan Spector?
I think that as much as I can't stand child pornography, I really do think, Terry, we're on dangerous ground with that kind of exemption. I worry about that kind of exemption. And I had not heard, as I told you, that Attorney General Zimmerman had proposed that. I think that's a little far-reaching for my taste, and I'm very concerned about pornography.
So you'd have trouble going along with eliminating that exemption?
I would. I would have trouble with that one.
I think that exemption is not only necessary to preserve the constitutionality of the current act, because the Supreme Court specifically made reference to exemptions of that sort in the Ferber decision, but I think it's also necessary to prevent groups from using the groups, perhaps not law enforcement groups, but other groups from using the legislation as a handle to go after sex education material. and even sex education material that's designed to prevent child abuse. So I think it's absolutely essential that at a minimum we preserve that exception.
Okay. Another proposal by Leroy Zimmerman is a 5-year minimum mandatory sentencing for people who've procured children for child pornography, for people who've filmed children in pornographic acts, or for people who sell pornographic literature or films with children in it. Barry Steinhardt, mandatory minimum sentencing of 5 years for that. Could you go along with that?
Well, we have generally opposed mandatory sentencing on a couple of grounds. One, we believe that each case ought to be judged on its own merits and the judiciary ought to have that opportunity. And secondly, we believe that incarceration is not the answer for all crimes. So we would oppose mandatory minimums.
Joan Spector.
Well, in this case, I must disagree with Barry. I think that anyone who is procuring children for sexual exploitation, for photographing, should know in advance, you do this and you're caught, you're going to jail. And you're going to jail for 5 years. I think it is despicable. I don't have any problem on this particular point at all. I really don't.
Do you go along with the general concept of mandatory sentencing?
No, I don't go along with the general concepts of mandatory sentencing. First of all, one of the problems with mandatory sentencing, as Barry knows, and I'm sure you know too, Terry, is when as soon as you have a mandatory sentence, and no one sentences. So it's a tremendous problem from that point of view.
But you'd support it in this context?
Well, I would support it in this context because I think that this kind of thing for adults to take children and to use them in sexual acts, to sell them, to do all these, to exploit them, is so repugnant and reprehensible that I would go along with it.
If I could, Terry, I might add one thing. One of the things we haven't talked much about on this show is that most child abuse takes place in the home. Figures, nobody knows the exact figures, but the estimates are 70, 80, perhaps a greater percentage. That is, in the largest sense, that is also true of child pornography in the sense of photographs of, we don't think of it normally as child pornography, but it in fact is. I mean, photographs of children taken in the context of the home. One concern that I have about this legislation, it's a concern women's groups have raised in a different context, and that's the context of mandatory minimums for child abuse, is that the victims may not come forward and the relatives of the victims may not come forward if they believe that their spouses or their lovers are going to spend 5 years in jail. And I would have a concern about that in this context as well.
I tell you, I would draw the line, Barry. I think that you are correct on the mandatory sentencing that the legislature in Pennsylvania just introduced and had enacted, because that will go to sexual abuse in the home, and I think that is a very, very difficult situation. But I think you look at the Kensington case. I mean, those kids are kids that are being procured not from someone's home where they're using their children, but they're being procured from the neighborhood. And I think it's very different. I think it's a very different kind of law that goes less to the family and more to people who prey on children outside the family. And that's, I would draw that distinction between the one that Leroy Zimmerman wants to introduce and the one that's on the books now. And one of the things that they're complaining about, Terry, is that the Mandatory Sentencing Act where on child abuse is not being allowed. It's not being, the judges aren't giving the sentence because they face this real problem of this within the family.
So you'd like to have one law apply to family incest with a child and another law apply to
definitely
sex with children outside the family?
Yes. I mean, people who commit incest within a family, there should be something done without question. I don't think it's a mandatory 5-year sentence. But I think you've got to deal with it without question, but not the other.
Just quickly, Barry Steinhardt of the ACLU, can you sanction making distinctions like that?
I think
in the
abuse
law?
Is the same.
Okay. Let's continue with one more proposal from Pennsylvania Attorney General Leroy Zimmerman. And this one would give local municipalities authority to license all daycare centers and similar centers to get background checks on prospective employees. And that would be in reaction to the recent cases of child abuse within child care centers. Barry Steinhardt, could you go along with letting daycare centers run those background checks on potential employees?
Well, we are currently looking at that legislation. I know Councilwoman Spector will probably have a great deal to say because she has similar legislation in City Council. I'm not certain whether we're going to be able to support it or at least take a hands-off attitude or not, so I'll let the Councilwoman talk.
It's a slightly different than that, Terry, what I'm proposing in Philadelphia. I'm proposing that AA Child Care Center themselves cannot make the check, but the name is forwarded to the welfare department. It is funneled through the welfare department. You have to remember that to teach in the Philadelphia Public School, there is a criminal check. That any employer in this city can, for $10, get a criminal check on any employee. That some companies require polygraphs of their employees once a month, and I know one of them. So that, and we're talking about people who deal with very young children who cannot express themselves, and my sense is that it's perfectly proper.
Okay, I'm talking about current child pornography proposals with Councilwoman Joan Spector of Philadelphia City Council and Barry Steinhardt, who's the director of the Philadelphia ACLU. Now, there's a lot of issues that I think we won't really have time to address, but I'd like you to tell me if it's relevant, in your opinion, to be thinking about the implications of what we are discussing to these other issues. For instance, a child is defined in terms of child pornography as under 16. A lot of teenagers, as we know, are having sexual relations at the age of 13, 14, and 15. And should we be drawing a line between consensual and non-consensual sexual relationships for children under 16? Knowing what we do about the kind of sexual habits that are really being practiced, whether we like it or not.
I guess I would draw the line on exploitive. Children who are exploited.
Would that mean consensual?
I would say it would be non-consensual. Children who are exploited are not giving consent. And I would draw the line there, and I would say that certainly those children have to be protected.
I think it's a very difficult question. I think we
do
have to...
I agree.
We'll see if we can agree on that. But it's very difficult to draw that line at a certain age. Or even at a certain biological stage in one's life, adolescence, I guess. But that is indeed is very difficult. In the Kensington case, for example, there are some of the defendants in that case are accused of having one act of sex with a 17-year-old child or man, depending upon your definition. That's a very, very difficult case. And in part, what we have to be careful in discussing this area is drawing those distinctions.
Am I right about 16 being the
yes, you're right.
Age
you
now?
Are right with regard to the child pornography laws. Yes.
Okay. So you can't really say where you stand now about whether we should regard, say, a sexual encounter between a 19-year-old and a 15-and-a-half-year-old person differently from, say, a 40-year-old person having sex with a 9-year-old.
No, I would draw the distinction on age. I think you have to have a cutoff. I think you have to protect a child. Where you draw the line, the court decides that where you draw the line. But I do think you have to draw a line. We draw a line for juvenile court and adult court. The lines are drawn. You draw a line. You may not be pleased with 16. It may be better to be 13. I don't know what it is, but you've drawn the line. You said it's 16. That's the law. That's what it should be.
I'm not sure where the line should be. I think that's very, very difficult. In time, the line may have to be moved back to face the reality of the sexual practices of adolescence.
One kind of general question. There's been so much coverage lately of child pornography and of sexual abuse in general. Do you think that at any point it crosses the line and the coverage itself becomes voyeuristic and in a way becomes an example of the problem? Have you felt that happening at all?
I know what you're saying. I haven't had that problem with it. I think that it's been a wonderful thing because this has been in the closet for decades. And the more it comes out, the more parents question their children, the more they're looking to schools to run these programs, Good Touch, Bad Touch, and the more concerned they are with what's happening. And I think all that is very positive. I know myself as a councilwoman, you have to bombard the public before they know anything about what's going on. And we are being bombarded, no question.
Do you feel coverage gets voyeuristic at a certain point?
Well, I think, first of all, that all the coverage has, in fact, had the positive effect of bringing the issue out of the closet. In fact, that's one of the reasons why we would suggest that you ought not to ban a portion of the material that's being discussed. One of the concerns that we have about the whole discussion of child sexual abuse is that there'd not be an air of hysteria created in which innocent persons are going to get swept up. After all, we've had, for example, in recent days, a number of reports of persons who were accused of sexual abuse who were found innocent or whom charges were dismissed. We saw that in the Kensington instance, where it's clear that a number of those defendants were painted as a particular kind of individual and, in fact, later turned out not to be. So that's one concern that we have about the coverage.
Do you share that concern, Joan Spector?
Well, sure. I think that you can't rush to justice. And you have to be very careful, very, very careful. You're dealing with people's lives, and that publicity, more than anything else, can ruin a person's life. So you have to be very careful.
To sum up, what do you think is at stake now as the city and the state debates what should be done about child pornography and child abuse and the way we're handling it? What do you think is at stake?
I think the freedom of expression as opposed to the right of people to perhaps exploit children, and that fine line that you've got to draw between the right of a person to express themselves in written material or otherwise, and the rights that a child needs to be protected.
I think what's at stake is not only the possible erosion of the principle of free speech, but that we may miss the real point, which is the real acts of abuse, and we may not go after the real problem, in particular the problem of child abuse in the home.
Okay, thank you both very much.
Thank you, Terry.